And it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. We got a big show today. Before we get into the topics at hand, I do want to tell you where you can learn more about Hope. Of course, you can at investinghope.com. You can listen to this show every single Tuesday afternoon at 5 o'clock at Joy 620. Or if you're not able to get in, get on the radio, get in your car, listen to the radio around that time, you can listen to the archive, the podcast. You can find that at investinghope.com. Apple, iTunes, Google Play, wherever podcasts are found, you can find this show, and we certainly are grateful that you're listening and paying attention to the things that are going on around the country and as we have these discussions. Last week, we talked about, I talked about my quarantine reset and some things that I've had to do in my own life to make sure that I'm not going overboard in terms of information, and it's easy to do that through social media and so much news and information coming at you so quickly nowadays that at times I think we can have overload and we don't want to do that. And so we talked about that last week. This week we're going to look at a couple stories, one concerning Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion industry, I guess abortion business, kind of the brand of abortion for the country is Planned Parenthood. And we're going to talk about some issues they are seeing in New York City. And you probably won't see this reported in many news outlets, but we're going to talk about it here. We're also going to look at a recent endorsement by Planned Parenthood in terms of presidential races. We probably won't spend a lot of time on that because no one's surprised that they are coming out in support of course, Joe Biden, who is now effectively not only, he used to be, I'm pro-life personally, but when it comes to policy, I'm pro-choice, and now he's completely flipped. And he's pro-abortion, and he's pro-taxpayer-funded abortions as well. And so we'll look at that briefly, but I want to spend the bulk of our time this afternoon looking at a new poll, a new study that's been put out about happiness. And during this COVID-19 season, what that's done to the psyche of the American people. And so it's an interesting study that I think you'll find interesting, and hopefully we can it can be fruitful to have a conversation about that. But we're going to start with the CEO of Planned Parenthood has been accused of abuse and racism by nearly 300 employees. And so a wise man once said, this is an article out of Students for Life, which is a great organization that works on campuses across the country. They say this, a wise man once said, quote, you can't practice vice virtuously. In Planned Parenthood's case, that means you can't run an aborting baby's business without employing some unsavory business practices and scandals and criminal activity and body part trafficking. In New York, it's trouble in paradise as over 546 Planned Parenthood staff and supporters put forth an open letter calling for the immediate removal of CEO Laura McQuaid. In this so-called, quote, worker uprising, complaints against Planned Parenthood of Greater New York's CEO McQuaid range from abusive behavior and financial mismanagement to racism and failure to properly respond to COVID-19. Mind you, the hundreds of people putting forth this letter are ardent abortion supporters. They note this at the beginning of their letter. This is what they say at the beginning of their letter. Quote, we are deeply committed to maintaining access to abortion and sexual and reproductive health care. That just means all abortion all the time. While acutely aware of the political landscape, we have experienced firsthand how constant public scrutiny perpetrates a culture of silence within reproductive health organizations. This has allowed our leadership to stoke fear that public expression of internal dysfunctions might threaten access to care. So what do they mean by that? They mean that we haven't came forward before because we've been told, look, if you come forward with negative things about our organization, then ultimately that's going to look bad for abortion, and ultimately less abortions will occur if you tell of the skeletons in our closet. That's what they're saying. They're saying that this abuse and this racism and these things have been going on for a while, but we've been hesitant to voice our concerns because we didn't want to bring a bad light to the abortion industry. And they say, over the past 18 months, staff have worked tirelessly to resolve the following issues internally by meeting with senior leadership and reaching out to our board of directors. And again, in other words, the abortion employees and supporters didn't want to draw attention to the chaos behind the curtain either. They worked fervently to keep anyone from knowing lest abortion rights take the fall. But Planned Parenthood cares so little for the well-being of its employees, even this pro-choice crowd was forced to go public. And so people got together. A group of non-white Planned Parenthood employees associated with the letter also noted, quote, they said this, at this point, the attempts to present itself as a diverse workplace have been carefully orchestrated and superficial at best. White and non-black employees are still given more pay and more advancement opportunities than their black colleagues. And so that's, I could go on further, but we've seen some problems in Planned Parenthood since Cecile Richards left. Now, one must wonder, does that mean the problems came after she left, or does she run such a tight ship that the problems just weren't voiced? And I would argue it's probably the latter. It's probably been like this for a while, and we know that because we can go back to the founding. Margaret Sanger, the founder of the organization Planned Parenthood, was a devout racist. Devout. She talked about eradicating society of the weeds, the lesser thans. Now, what does she mean by that? What does she want to eradicate the weeds? Who was she calling the weeds? She was calling minorities, those with disabilities as well, those that were inferior. She wanted a perfect race. Google it, research it. I'm not making these things up. So it's not shocking to see that in 2020, when we see all the news that's coming out, it's not shocking to see that Planned Parenthood is now in the middle of it. You see, what has happened to our society is, and we've said this for a long time, I've said this for a long time, if you don't get life in the womb correct, you're not going to get it right anywhere. And so you can't look at me and tell me you care deeply about racism in this country and seeing a change when you abort 3,000 babies a day. That doesn't mesh. Millions and millions and millions of babies have been aborted since 1973. And then where typically do abortion clinics open their doors? They do so in minority communities. Look at the map across the country. That's where they go to. Now, why is that? Is it because they care deeply? No, it's because they want to prey on the vulnerable. They want to go after the vulnerable, those that are struggling. And I've made this argument for a while as well. If you want to tell me that you care deeply about the issue, that abortion is a right, and that reproductive rights has to occur, and that abortion should be on demand for any reason at any point, if you really believe that, I mean truly believe that to your core, then how come when someone walks into an abortion clinic, they are asked to pay? Now, why is that? And I'm not saying that the government should pay for it, which is what the argument is by the abortion industry. I'm asking, why do they have to pay at all? Why does the government have to pay? You see, back in the 70s, the early 70s, when pregnancy centers got their start, they did so even before 1973 because we kind of saw the writing on the wall that abortion was becoming a thing. And so people were so moved and are still today so moved that they opened pregnancy centers across this country and they don't charge a dime. So what does that mean? If a patient comes into a pregnancy center, all we say is we're here to serve. We'll provide that pregnancy test. We'll provide that ultrasound. We'll provide those parenting classes. We'll provide you mentoring. We'll provide you a baby shower. We'll provide for you on the back of taxpayers? No. On the back of your insurance? No. On the back of your bank account? No. You see, we'll provide those services for you because we love you so much, we want to remove obstacles in your life so that this baby might have a chance, so that you might have a chance. But see, the abortion industry doesn't work that way. The abortion industry says, we care so much about you. We care so much about you having the right to an abortion and that you receiving that service. We care so much about you that we're willing to charge your insurance, we're willing to charge the taxpayer, and we're willing to charge your bank account. You see, at any point, the abortion industry could provide these services at no cost. No one is requiring them to charge money for these abortions. No one. There's not a piece of legislation that says in order to get an abortion, funds have to be exchanged between patient and doctor, between patient and organization. No, there's none of that. You see, but this is about making money. And they make billions. Billions of dollars. And so am I surprised that the CEO of the Planned Parenthood organization there in New York City is in hot water? No. Of course I'm not surprised. Their career and their industry is built on ending the lives of innocent human beings. Every meeting, every strategy discussion, every conference they go to, the focus of those things are how can we provide more abortions? Now, why is that? Because that's where they make their most money. And then we saw in the David DeLayden videos just a few years back, not only are they making money off that, they're also making money off the aborted fetus, off the baby itself, as they sell it to researchers, sell body parts of aborted babies to researchers. We now have them on record saying that. Depositions where they admittedly say on record, under oath, yeah, we sold those bodies and those body parts. But here we are, somewhat surprised that an organization that makes its money from ending the life of unborn babies, I'm supposed to be surprised now that they have some issues going on in leadership, racism issues, abuse issues. Why should I be surprised when we see hidden camera video after hidden camera video showing that they typically side with the abuser? A lot of cases, we've seen hidden camera videos of clients going into a Planned Parenthood and saying that they are underage and saying that we've even seen videos where the man that is with the patient is acting as her pimp, and the employees of that Planned Parenthood affiliate is telling them what to say on the form so not to get in trouble. But I'm supposed to be surprised that they have some major issues in leadership. Look, this is not going to be talked about on cable news. It's not going to be talked about. It probably won't even be talked about on Fox News. It won't be talked about on local news. Students for Life has had to write an article on it. You see, this isn't a surprise. I've said it here, and I'll say it until I'm blue in the face. The goal of every single abortion is to end the life of a human. The definition of a successful abortion means that a heartbeat is ended. Means that a life is ended. That's a successful abortion. You know what a botched abortion is? A botched abortion means that a baby survived. They would call that a failure, but the baby survived. In any other scenario, my mom's a cancer survivor. She survived the cancer. That's success. But when it comes to abortion, the surviving of the baby is botched. It's a failure. Why? Because the goal is to end the life. This isn't about reproductive rights. This isn't about anything else. It's about a cash cow making tons and tons and tons of money. And I'll argue with anybody on that. Because if it wasn't about making tons and tons of money, then you would provide that abortion at no cost. But you don't do that, and you won't do it, because there's way too much money involved, and you don't want to leave that money on the table. We'll talk more when we come back. Oh, it's the story I'll tell. So as we continue today, I know that I told you at the start of the show, we were also going to look at an endorsement given by Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion provider in this country. But no one's surprised there. They came out and endorsed Joe Biden for president. Is anyone surprised? Why is that even a news story? I mean, frankly, of course they were going to support the platform of the DNC currently is that of abortion on demand for any reason at any point in time. And the taxpayers should pay for it. That is ultimately their goal. And so they've, you know, Joe Biden has gone from I'm personally pro-life to now I'm openly pro-choice and not just pro-choice, but pro-abortion. And so that's the direction the party wanted to take. That's the direction that candidate wanted to take. And that's the direction, obviously, the abortion industry is encouraging. And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that because that shouldn't surprise you. It shouldn't surprise you. I mean, that's where we are as a country. That's where we are as a society. That it's openly discussed now. Used to, it was kind of discussed behind closed doors. You know, they would say things like, I even know people that would say, look, personally, I'm pro-life. Look, I'm with you. Or when I was in college and debating people in class, after class, I'd have people come up and say, I agree with everything you said. Now, I'm not going to support you publicly. But now they flipped. They don't even want you to say, I'm personally pro-life. You know, they talk about the big tent mentality. There is no big tent. Governor Cuomo in New York saying, if you are pro-life, you do not need to live in our state. That's what he said. Think about that. That's insane. So now we have politicians openly telling people, leave our state if you are pro-life. We don't want you here. And so no surprise that they come out in support of Joe Biden. And it's going to be interesting to see in the days to come what that looks like. This presidential election has been a bit odd because of COVID. And, you know, the President Trump just had his first rally in a long time in Tulsa just over the weekend. Tons of people showed up. Joe Biden still, you know, not coming out. I don't know what's going to go on there, but I digress. What I want to talk about now is there's a great article over at it's through the University of Chicago. Talking about happiness among Americans dips to 5-decade low. Now think about that. Let's just, on paper, okay? On paper, there is no better time to live than in 2020, period. On paper, there's no better place to live than the United States of America in the year 2020. I mean, I'm reading you these news stories from my phone, which is a supercomputer that I carry in my pocket every day. The technology, the advancement in technology that we have seen, the freedoms that we have in this country, the wealth that we have in this country. Now, wouldn't you say all of those are makers of happiness? That's what we've been told our whole life. Look, achieve the American dream and you'll be happy. Two cars in the driveway, a white picket fence, and you'll be happy. When 2020, a lot of people have 3-4 cars in the driveway, a boat, a trampoline, a pool, a nice playhouse, toys to play on the weekend, money in our bank account. But people aren't happy. So the article says this, in the midst of the coronavirus outbreak, the public's happiness is at a 5-decade low, despite most Americans being satisfied with their financial situation, according to a new survey at the University of Chicago. The study highlights how Americans' outlook and emotional health compared to nearly 50 years of trends in public opinion data from the General Social Survey, an ongoing project with NORC has conducted since 1972. The historical context reveals unique impacts of the outbreak on public sentiment. An all-time low in the people saying they are very happy, 14%, combined with an all-time high in people saying they're satisfied with their family's financial situation, which is at 80%. These contrasting findings suggest that people are comparing their happiness to their own psychological well-being before the pandemic, while assessing their finances in relation to the millions of fellow Americans who have lost jobs, wages, or investments following the outbreak. The results also illustrate how Americans are reacting differently to the coronavirus pandemic compared to previous national tragedies. For example, fewer Americans report crying or feeling dazed than either after the John F. Kennedy assassination in 1963 or the 9/11 terrorist attacks in 2001, but more report having lost their temper or feeling bored during the pandemic. With many social distancing guidelines in place, about twice as many Americans report feeling isolated, at least sometimes compared to 2 years ago, 50% versus 23%. Since 2018, fewer people are also now satisfied with their social relationships, and more are reporting a fair or poor ability to carry out their social activities. People who live in a country with a high number of, or a county with a high number of COVID-19 deaths are lonelier than those living in less impacted counties. In addition, those in high impact counties are more likely to say they are not happy than are those living in less impacted counties, 32% versus 21%. Here's some other key findings from the study. 42% of Americans believe that their children's standard of living when they are older will be better than their own standard of living, a sharp decline from 57% in 2018 and the lowest level of optimism for the next generation since first measured in 1994. The percentage of Americans who feel they often lack companionship has risen from 10% in 2018 to 18% in May 2020. Compared to after 9/11, fewer Americans report feeling on top of the world. That's a weird thing to feel. 27% versus 37%, or like things are going their way. 63% versus 70%. And more Americans feel depressed. 38% versus 33%. More Americans say they have lost their temper more often after the COVID-19 outbreak, 30%, than said the same after 9/11, 20%. Or the Kennedy assassination, 19%. More Americans currently report that they often feel anxious, depressed, or irritable compared to 2 years ago, 18% versus 13%. Those who say they have likely been exposed to someone with the coronavirus are nearly twice as likely to feel like difficulties are piling up so high that they cannot overcome them, 21% versus 11%. The COVID response tracking study is an effort to examine the social, psychological, and economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on American society. This is the first wave of longitudinal study, which will include re-interviewing respondents at various points following the outbreak of COVID-19. This survey was conducted by NORC at the University of Chicago and with funding from the National Science Foundation. And so they interviewed people between May 21st and 29th with adults ages 18 and over representing the 50 states and the District of Columbia. Panel members were randomly drawn and 2,279 completed the survey. 2,047 were via the web and 232 via telephone. Interviews were conducted in both English and Spanish, depending on the respondent's preference. And so what does that mean for us? We're less happy right now. So do you base your happiness on what's going on around you? Do you base your happiness on what your bank account looks like? Do you base your happiness on marriage? Do you base your happiness on being a parent? Do you base your happiness on social, just being social, being around people? Is your happiness based on your church? Is your happiness based on what you have in your driveway? All of these are important questions. And when we come back, what we're going to do is look more into how do we define happiness? And how do we respond in a pandemic as Christians? What does that look like for us and for our families? We'll be back.
Oh, someone who needs that somebody like I do. Oh, I can't believe that I found someone like you. Like you.
As we continue the conversation, that we ended the last segment with a study out of the University of Chicago about happiness during COVID-19. And so this is it's a weird time. And there's no, you know, everybody's using the word pivot. Everybody's using the word new normal and all these, you know, it's nonsense because it's frustrating because no one really knows what the next step's going to look like. No one knows if there's going to be a second wave. No one what the fall looks like. No one. No one. Not even the experts. Nobody knows. And so the uncertainty of it all, the uncertainty makes us go, I don't know. I don't know if I should be happy or not. Then there's also guilt. There's been thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that have lost their jobs during this time. And there's others that haven't lost their job. There's some that this is some of the best financial times in their lifetime. Think about that. I know there's an RV place that in their 50 years of being in business, family-run business, the last few months have been their best months ever. Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, Amazon, booming. It's Black Friday every day. And then you have small restaurants closed, barbershops closed, hair salons closed. Small businesses not able to make it through COVID, closed forever. And so there's some guilt there of like, well, I mean, I'm happy, but do I need to tell that on the survey? Do I need, if I say I'm happy, does that mean I don't care about those that are struggling? Of course not. But there's a mixed bag. We're struggling with what that looks like. We don't even talk about it much at my house because I don't want to put my kids through it. But when I lay down with my kids at night and we pray, my four-year-old, consistently every single night, and probably because she heard me one time or a couple times pray this, but every night when we lay down, my four-year-old says, God, be with those that lost their jobs and let them get new jobs. You see, so this is having an impact on everybody. And so when we think about that, we're going to have anxiety. I talked to my mom this morning. She teaches piano lessons. And somebody that she teaches in piano, a young girl, that girl's aunt said on Facebook that she tested positive for COVID. Now, this little girl hasn't been around her aunt in months, right? So she hasn't been around her aunt at all since she had the virus. But my mom's getting phone calls and texts from family members saying, you can't teach her to play piano right now. It's too dangerous. Even though she hasn't been around the person. And those same people that are texting and calling my mom are going to Walmart and going out and being around other people. So it's a weird time. We've politicized everything. Even COVID is politicized. Wearing masks is now politicized. Social distancing is now politicized. And it's exhausting. And that's what we talked about last week and kind of the quarantine reset. But because of all of those things, we have unhappiness. Yeah, I heard Matt Chandler's a pastor out of Texas, and he said, we are the most connected we've ever been. Now think about that. Through social media and the avenues we have online, we are the most connected group of people that the planet has ever seen. Right? I mean, you know more about people now than you've ever known about them. Used to, we would wait till that 10-year, that 20-year class reunion. We go, I wonder if they lost their hair. Wonder if they gained weight. Wonder if they lost weight. Wonder if they got married. Wonder how many kids they got. Did the guy that was voted most likely to succeed really succeed? We don't know. We got to wait till the class reunion. Well, now you don't wait. Now class reunions, there's not even a point. Because you know everything. If they're honest on their social media, which typically they're not. And so we know all of these things. We're the most connected we've ever been, yet we're the most bored we've ever been. Everything at my fingertips. Supercomputer in my pocket. And I'm bored. Think about that. So of course that's going to bring unhappiness. Because it's never enough. You ever had those moments where that first job you had and whatever that pay was, you were like, man, I made it. And then 5 years into that job, you're like, I can't believe they're not paying me more. What's going on? And so you get that next job and you're like, I finally made it. I finally made the salary that I think I'm deserved. And man, this is amazing. Then 5 years down the road, I can't believe they're not paying me more. Why are they not paying me more? or you get that vehicle, you're like, that's my dream vehicle, man. You have no idea how excited I am now that I have my dream vehicle. And then a year into it, you're stopping at stoplights going, man, look at that dude's truck. Man, look at that car. You know what I told my family this weekend? For Father's Day, my kids and my mother-in-law cleaned out the Wood Family Church van. They vacuumed it, cleaned it up. And I sit there, I looked at my mother-in-law and I said, you know, I had, my first vehicle was a 1991 GMC Jimmy with a 3-inch lift, giant tires. It was amazing. Loved it. Then when I graduated, I got an F-150, loudest truck in the county. That's a big deal. For those of you city folks, you don't know what that means, but it was a big deal. The girls liked it. The friends liked it. Everybody liked it. I loved that truck. But I looked over at my mother-in-law and I said, you know what? Out of all the vehicles I've had, I think my favorite one is the Wood Family Church van. I'm completely satisfied with it. Now, will that last? I don't know. But see, we go through these phases of unhappiness. And it's not so much unhappiness as it is boredom. As it is, we're just not satisfied with what we have. There's always that next thing. And so what we found in this study that I just talked about last segment was for many of these people, financial situations are okay. Many of the folks they interviewed, financially, they're fine. Now, typically, that coincides with happiness because you don't have the stress of bills. You don't have the stress of debt. Financially, you're okay, so you can be happy. But what they're finding is people aren't happy. They're stressed. They have anxiety. Oh, I came in contact with somebody that has COVID or might have COVID, and now I might get COVID. Oh, is the second wave coming? I don't know. Is it coming or is it not coming? I think it may be coming, so I can't go out. Oh, do I wear a mask or do I not wear a mask? Or do I go to church or not go to church? Or do I go to the store or not go to the store? And when you live in that scenario, you're going to be unhappy. It's impossible not to be. Because there's no right answers. There's no right answers. And so I would make the assessment that as more people get on social media, the more unhappy and bored society will be. Period. And because we create this, there's always something else. Well, is this really who I'm supposed to be with for the rest of my life? These are the kids that God gave me? Or why won't God give me kids? Or why won't God give me that special someone? You see, when you wrestle with these things constantly, happiness is going to be an afterthought. And anxiety and stress and frustration and anger is going to be prevalent in our lives. And so what we're finding, and this is the unfortunate part, what we're finding is families, lifelong friendships are being ended because someone posted something about COVID or because someone posted something about the presidential election. Not because they said something in a one-on-one conversation, but because somebody posted something. Come on, folks. You see, there was a time in my life where I would see people as pawns, not as image bearers, but you know, if I knew how you voted, that would tell me a lot about you. And so I didn't see you as an image bearer that had value. I saw you as, okay, this is how you vote, then I can either agree with you or disagree with you. But that's not healthy. That's not gospel centric. That's not what we've been called to do. And so if we're going to look for happiness in our stuff, in our financial situation, in uncertainty, then you're not going to be happy, period. There's a really good chance all of us have come in contact with somebody that has COVID or has come in contact with somebody that has COVID. It's hard to get around. That's the truth. We just don't know. And the reason why this is different than 9/11 is because with 9/11, we saw the buildings go down. We knew how many lives were lost. And then we rallied together to go after an enemy. Now, people can disagree on the way that we went about that and what that looked like over the next 20, 25 years. But the reality is, it was easier to band together around that. But the uncertainty of this COVID-19 season, it's harder to band together because everybody has an opinion one way or the other. And now we have the platforms to put those opinions out, which we didn't have 9/11. See the difference? We'll talk more when we come back. Gotta keep it real simple. Keep it real simple. Bring everything right back to ground zero. Because it all comes down to this. Love God and love people. We live in a world that keeps breaking. But if we want to find a way to change it, it all comes down to this. Love God and love people. You know, it sounds simple, but love God and love people. That's kind of the thing. And so as we think through that, and as we think about happiness, we think about joys, we think about the things that are going on currently in our society, there's a lot of unhappiness. There's a lot of boredom. There's a lot of frustration. But how are we responding in those moments, especially as Christians? How are we responding? If somebody asked you, are you happy? What's your response? Now, there's a difference between happiness and joy. But if they asked you, are you happy? Is your response no? Well, why not? What is the driver of your happiness? What is it? I can't answer that for you. But those are things that we need to think about. Are we bored with life? Are we bored at our job? Are we bored with the money that we're making? Are we bored with our vehicle? Are we bored with social media? And so as we walk down this path, as we look at COVID season, however long that may be, what's defining us? Part of that study from the University of Chicago also looked at that some folks were saying, I don't want to go back to normal. Like, I look back at who I was and where I was before COVID, before the pandemic, and I look at where I am and who I am today. And when all this is said and done, I don't want to go back to who I was. So for some, it may be changing jobs. For some, it may be reprioritizing some things. Maybe you were hauling your children to every ball field in Knox County or whatever county you live in. And you're looking now at the end of 2020 or at the end of this COVID season, and you're going, yeah, maybe that's not what we need to be doing. Maybe it is. But are there any sacred cows within our priorities that we're not willing to let go of that we need to let go of? And COVID forced us to let go of them. And we're going, oh, this is kind of nice. What are those? For some of you right now, you're deciding. Are your kids going back to school normal this fall? If all things considered and the schools open back as they always have, are your kids going back? Maybe this was the moment for your family to decide on Christian school or a private school or homeschool or a co-op. There's so many options. Maybe this forced you to look and say, okay, we can do something different. And that's okay. What does that look like? But don't let society define happiness. The American dream is an amazing thing, and that's why we have been the greatest country the planet has ever seen. That's why millions have moved here from all over the world. But hear me, Christians. The American dream is not the be-all, end-all. It's nice. But that's not where our hope is found. It's just not. And so where is the happiness? Do you find yourself dealing more with anxiety during this season? Are you feeling uneasy about the future? Well, look, in a post-Genesis 3 world, we don't know what the future holds. And we talked about it on this show the last few months as well, that even during this pandemic, we've still had car wrecks. We've still had people die of heart attacks. We've had people die of cancer, been diagnosed with cancer. Surgeries had to be performed. You see, so even during a pandemic, life continues to happen. Brokenness continues to happen. And so if you sit back and you just worry about all the uncertainty, all the things you don't know that are coming down the pike, then it's going to cripple you. And it's not healthy. We don't know what's coming. So I'm going to give you the advice I gave my mom this morning. Turn the news off for just a few hours. Start there. Put your phone down. Or download a great audiobook and go walk for half an hour a night. Just go walk. Do it as a family. Do it by yourself. Do it with your spouse, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. Just take some time. It's okay. You can do that. And I promise you, you'll appreciate it on the other side. We'll talk to you next week.